welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as usual, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
Well, it's been a great week, isn't it? Well, it seems ages since we were last around here. It was, about 4 days ago, wasn't it?
It was, just before the weekend.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's Monday night here, and it's been a hectic weekend, isn't it? I mean, your weekend box set.
I know.
Terry, your weekend box set this
weekend. Yeah, all killer, no filler.
Was amazing. There were some amazing games in there. Sunday was a miserable day in the UK. It was like autumn had generally arrived, didn't it? It was like, it thought, 1st of October, right here, have some autumn. It was a real day to just sit in front of the telly and just load up on football.
Yeah, and we did.
And we did.
Didn't we just?
And it kicked off with a 4-4 draw.
Four-all draw.
Yeah.
Sociedad Betis.
Yeah.
Followed by Bayern Munich losing a 2-0 lead
again.
2-2 draw with Hertha. Followed by Atalanta Juve, which was also a 2-2 draw.
Amazing.
And you can pick them.
And Atalanta, of course, you know, not fancied against Juve. So that was a big result. Fantastic games.
Yeah.
Lots of goals. Not much going on defending-wise. if you liked a little bit more of that, then the game the previous night, the Saturday game, the Chelsea-Man City game, was also a cracker for different reasons.
Yeah.
But that way, I really enjoy that game, and I'm glad I picked it, because I almost was contrary. Yes. And picked Hamburg versus Werder Bremen. But I knew my refined Bundesliga palate just had a feeling that that game was going to be a stinker. And it was. Well, it was 0-0. It may not have been a stinker because I didn't watch it. I watched Chelsea-Man City, which was a cracking game.
It was a very good game.
Mm. Yeah. Now, one game that was on Sunday was very interesting for completely different reasons. I don't know if either of you actually caught it. I flicked over just for a brief time, long enough to watch Messi score. But it was a rather eerie showing of the Barcelona home game.
Mm.
Barcelona was taking on Las Palmas
in
front of no spectators.
Yeah. I did switch it on for a bit.
Yeah.
But I felt I was intruding, frankly.
Yeah.
So I switched over.
Yeah, exactly the same thing happened to me when I just saw all the stewards there that were supposed to be shepherding the fans around or just milling around watching the game. Yeah, it felt a bit odd.
Yeah.
Well, it felt very odd for many different reasons.
Hmm.
But yeah, I felt like it was intruding.
It was odd because, I mean, I'm fully aware of the context because I've been on Twitter and I'd seen some of the footage from the polling booths in Catalonia.
Yeah, which was actually still happening while this game was going on.
And so thought, this is all a bit creepy. I don't think I should be watching this game.
Mm.
So I didn't.
But that leads us on to what we're going to be talking about this week. And this week's discussion is going to be all about politics and football. Now, there is a lot of debate actually on the other side of the Atlantic at the moment about allowing political statements to be made in sport. This is focused largely on the NFL and players taking a knee during the national anthem. It happened again this weekend, and it happened at Wembley. We actually saw it firsthand here, what's actually going on. The furore has really kicked up because the president has decided that it's a bad thing and disrespectful. Obviously, everyone else has got involved with that, and they think, well, no, they're perfectly right to do that. And other people saying, well, basically people who work for Fox saying, no, this is a terrible thing. But we see something else completely different when you come over here, when we've got what happened at Barcelona yesterday. Because what happened in Barcelona was also seen by many as a political act.
Mm.
The decision to play the game behind closed doors was taken by the owner of Barcelona as a pretty much a silent protest to La Liga's decision not to allow them to postpone the game.
Mm. Yeah, he didn't want to play the game at all.
You're the one with actual qualifications in politics.
I think that actually puts me at the back of the queue as qualified to talk about it.
What are the whys and wherefore of this? There were stories on Twitter yesterday about people coming from all over the world
to come
over, because Barcelona, as we spoke last week, global fan base, people had come from Australia to come and see their favourite players.
Well, I won't burden the listeners with my opinion, but I mean, I'll try and see if I can give an understanding of how the thinking works. As you say, there's this referendum going on. There are the civil guards, who have been bussed in from outside to stop the vote from happening. and unpleasantness ensues, and the Barcelona owner feels it's best to postpone the game, but can't or doesn't feel as though he can because he's worried about sanction from the league. And so he makes this decision to have it behind closed doors. Now, I think he would probably say that the political situation and the political matter is of greater importance than the needs and the requirements of tourists coming to the city, coming to the club. Even the ones who have paid significant amounts of money to come to the club to watch this game, and they may never, ever, ever get to the chance again. I mean, there was that bit, there's people from Australia who'd been, and I mean, that's heartbreaking for them. It must be, because they've spent all this money, had all this time. But I guess what I would say is, if you're going to Barcelona, if you're going to Europe from all that time, and if you're pinning all your hopes on one game of football, then I don't know. I suspect that they had a very big holiday and having a big holiday, and I'm sure they're having a lovely time, irrespective of whether they managed to get into a football match.
Yeah.
And I think that politics do probably trump football and sport in this instance, and they felt that this was a gesture that was necessary. There are others who are saying that they didn't go far enough. I listened to the La Liga podcast on the way home from work today, and Guillaume Balague was on there. Well, we all think all manner of things about Guillaume Balague, but he is a Catalonian and he is of Barcelona. He lives in Barcelona, and he bore witness to some of the things that we saw on there. And so he was extremely highly strung, as you could imagine, quite uptight about it. And he wasn't entirely certain whether or not this game really should have gone ahead, and that perhaps, and he was reflecting a view that perhaps the game shouldn't have happened. At least that's the inference that I got from him. And that actually Barcelona should have taken any points deduction that comes their way and just simply accepted it, because there is a greater principle involved. And if the league or the Spanish Federation, whoever it is who dishes out these penalties, want to fine them, award 3-0 win, 6-point deduction, I think is something that could happen, then they should just say, well, fine, we did it because, frankly, it's worth it.
Jan, what do you think? Do you think that they should have not played it, they should have just taken it, or do you think they did the best thing possible in that situation and played it behind closed doors?
Well, the way I heard about this, and I am answering the question by saying this, was I had a very busy day yesterday, and the one time I sat down, I had a notification come through from one of the sports news apps that I have, popped up saying that the game was going to be played behind closed doors.
Mm.
Now, I knew that the referendum was going ahead. I didn't know anything that was happening, though, because I'd been out of the house all day.
Right, yeah.
When I started to investigate, and I went on my rare forays into Twitter to find out what was going on there, and I could see that, you know, the horror that was unfolding, I kind of understood the circumstances behind it. If they'd gone to the extent of actually not playing the game and taking the points deduction, I think they would have taken a very moral stand. However, that would have lasted a few minutes.
Yeah.
And it would have been forgotten, and it wouldn't have made the headlines like it did today. So I was drawn into the politics of Catalonia very, very quickly because of what they did. My eyes were on it. A lot of people's eyes were on it because of that. And a lot of people are talking about it in the press today across the entire world. And I think that they played that beautifully to get across the point that they were trying to get across.
Yeah.
I don't think that, you know, being martyrs and taking the hit on points would have had the same impact.
Had they cancelled the game arbitrarily, they would have put the Spanish Federation and the league, the authorities, in a position where they would have had to have taken action against Barcelona in what must be, at the moment, an exceptionally tense situation, which could conceivably cause further escalation, or certainly be unhelpful in what is must presumably be, at the moment, an extremely tense situation between the people of Catalonia and the people of the rest of Spain and the respective governing bodies. So perhaps not giving the Spanish Federation, who are probably the last people that you want to get involved in these kind of matters, some kind of involvement in this, well, I hesitate to call it a dispute, but for the want of a better word, for this dispute, is probably why. So perhaps there is, I'm not suggesting that that was in their minds, but perhaps one of the more fortunate consequences of this is that hopefully the Spanish Federation will just simply accept what happened and take no more action for fear of adding more fuel to the fire, so to speak.
Now, I'm not going to pretend to know every detail about the relationship that Barcelona have with La Liga, but the La Liga's president, Javier Tebas, is reportedly a Real Madrid fan. they knew this referendum was coming up. Mm. This has been building up to this all week. The rest started on Wednesday, and yet the game was still scheduled for Sunday. Barcelona weren't allowed to postpone it because they were threatened with not only losing it 3-0, but also a points deduction as well. However, in the second division, Gymnastic and Barcelona B were both allowed to postpone their games without any sanction.
Well, again, I'm getting this from Guillaume Balaguer's description. This is not my research. This is his insight. So I'm just regurgitating it. So for anyone who's listened to that podcast, then I apologise if you're hearing this again. The Catalan police present at the stadium felt, from a security point of view, which is their remit, there was no reason why the game shouldn't go ahead from their point of view. They didn't feel that by staging the game would cause a security problem. Perhaps at those other games where they have less security, perhaps there was a concern that there would be. Mm. I don't know. So it might well be that there are other concerns. Or it might just simply be that those games are considerably lower profile and so therefore there's no perceived harm or broader concerns about cancelling those games. Mm. The big one, obviously, is Barcelona. I mean, you have to wonder what would have happened if Espanyol had been in town and playing on that day.
Yeah.
So, you know, but which we don't know how that would have gone down. But of course, I mean, it's silly because, I mean, that's not the case. Barca were home. As for the actual staging of the game on a Sunday, I'm sure they had their reasons. And I'm not one of these people who necessarily subscribes to conspiracies and overt political gestures. It might well just simply be that they didn't think it through.
Yeah, and considering what football organisers are like.
Yeah, it's more actually that's probably the better course of action to take is just assume that they're just bumbling idiots. Yeah. Because I mean, in our experience, they are.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm not certain to what extent people anticipated what was going to happen on Sunday would happen this way. My impression of this was that this was a referendum that the Madrid government had said was illegal, and that I just simply thought that they would have the referendum and the Madrid government would go, we don't care about your referendum.
Yeah.
I didn't expect them to send guards in and try and break it up, like, you know, as though this was some kind of fascist state. I mean, and I don't know to what extent anybody else might have had that thought. Now, they're much closer to it than I am. Perhaps I'm being naive. Perhaps I am genuinely being naive. But, I mean, I would have just thought that they would have gone, all right, OK, you've had your referendum. Well, that's fine. No, it's illegal and it doesn't make any difference.
Yeah. But the problem is politics is everywhere in Spain. And for a country that was under fascist rule for 40 years, then it's no surprise.
No.
But when you have a former Spanish coach, Javier Clemente, who led Spain in Euro 96, describing Javier Tebas as a Nazi concentration camp commander because of his links with the right-wing parties during the 80s.
Yeah.
It does make you think everything is so...
Yeah, there's a lot of there's a lot of anger going on.
Yeah.
I mean, we're looking at it from a, you know, relatively calm political... I mean, we've been through some political instability in our time, but
yeah.
I mean, not to the same degree that they have over there. So it's difficult, I guess, to empathise, and I guess it's easy to be quite naive about you know, making statements. I'm quite careful not to say anything that that may seem silly because I you know, I've never even been to Spain.
Mm. Well, there you go. That's nice. Well, one thing that makes the situation even more pressing is the fact that there is a chance that the Catalonian president might unilaterally declare independence,
whatever that actually means in the
long term, this week. And it may even happen on the same day that Spain are playing.
Yeah.
Spain play Albania in their World Cup qualifier this weekend. Now, that's the Spanish team with not only has it got, I think, four Catalonian players in it, including Busquets, Marc Bartra, Jordi Alba, and, of course, Gerard Piqué, who's been quite vocal about the whole referendum.
Well, he's offered to quit.
If anyone's got a problem with it, he has offered to quit. If Busquets' 100th appearance, if he plays as well. So obviously sometime that would normally be involved in a celebration.
Mm.
What do you reckon? Can you see them doing something like taking the knee during the Spanish anthem or something like that? I mean,
It wouldn't surprise me if there was some kind of protest that happens. Whether they'll go as far as to refuse to play, or whether they'll wear some kind of armband or something, or they'll wear a t-shirt that they, you know, underneath it they lift it up, and I don't know. It could be anything that they do. But
well, exactly.
But you know, but you can't go out there with something that's being displayed overtly, because you know you risk.
Political emblems are banned.
Well, yes, there is that, and as well as that, you're gonna go out there when there's gonna be a large amount of Spanish supporters there that may not agree with your politics. So, if they did that, they risk ostracising themselves from large swathes of Spanish society. Well,
PK's already been barracked from the stands during training today.
Yes.
So there is already the feeling that, even though, I mean, look, from everything that I saw, he was very, very measured in his
PK gets abuse from Spain fans every time he plays.
Yeah.
And has done for some time now. Yeah. Well, obviously, he'll get even more as a consequence of this, assuming that he plays. And that's assuming he plays and assuming he's picked. But you would imagine that he will be picked because he he's a top player. But I mean, it's possible the coach might decide to leave him out. We're now moving into areas of discussion which go way beyond football, but of course it could have a massive impact on football, on that particular game. And of course, there could be if some of the players or one of the players decides to mount some kind of demonstrable protest before that match, perhaps during the anthems. Yeah. But then could alter the dynamic of the situation even more. My instinct is that they wouldn't.
No.
Because I think the situation's escalated too quickly. And I also think that there's a good possibility that there'll be players there who, you know, will feel very strongly that this isn't what they want to do.
Mm.
It's difficult to make comparisons. If you are an NFL player who decides to take the knee, then it's possible that you're in a dressing room or a locker room situation where your players, where your teammates, some of your teammates may not agree with you, but will respect the fact that you do that.
Mm.
I'm not entirely certain that would necessarily be the situation here, because it's different. These people aren't protesting against racial injustice.
Mm.
They are participating in an extremely delicate political situation between two nations. And I mean, it's not the same dynamic, and I wonder if I guess it depends. We'll find out. But I mean, I suspect that cooler heads will prevail.
Yeah, you'd imagine that that the authorities would speak to the Catalonian players involved and say, look, you know, is your politics going to cause anyone a problem? This is a very, very sensitive time for this country, regardless of which side of the line you stand on. If it's going to be a problem for you to play for Spain this week, then, you know, how about you just don't play?
Mm.
And we'll just... And then that...
Yeah. It could, and it's Albania, so...
Yeah.
I must admit, I mean, I don't think there's going to be any outward display.
No,
I don't think so. I mean, almost all of the noises coming out from players and managers has been to downplay.
Yeah, and PK's language in this has always been conciliatory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it wouldn't be consistent, I think, for him to be quite so confrontational.
No. The move that Barcelona made this week, it is very strong for Barcelona, because usually they have never actually come outwardly and said that they are supportive of partition or secession. No,
they've had owners who have been large.
Well, he was the leader of one of the parties that wanted secession. So.
Right.
But the crowd will chant at 17 minutes 14 seconds.
Mm. Yes,
because of 1714 was the year that Barcelona became part of Spain, and so there is a big movement for it in there. But they never actually say they never supported the yes vote. But they are supportive of a vote.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway. They think that the Catalan people should decide these things.
So it's the whole thing of self-determination.
Even Pep came out and said that as well, didn't he?
Yes.
He said, you know, regardless of which way you think on this, you should come out and vote.
I think Pep voted, albeit by post.
Really?
Which is, so he didn't have to go to a polling station.
What is interesting before potentially we leave the subject is that the Barcelona players, or certainly the Barcelona employees and players, are observing the general strike in Catalonia tomorrow. So they're refusing to train.
Right.
Yeah. So I think that this is going to rumble on A lot longer. I thought it was probably done and dusted, and then we saw that.
Does that include the Catalonian players with the Spanish squad?
Assuming they haven't left yet to go to training.
Yeah, maybe some of them will be gone. I mean, like, for example, yeah. I mean, like, Messi's name was being mentioned, and I read a Sky Deutschland report saying that Messi's name was being figured. I thought, well, it's possible he might be on a plane to Argentina by this point. Mm-hmm. So I don't know whether or not that said. Nevertheless, it's a bold statement, and I fear that this whole business has actually taken moderate people and put them on a side.
Mm.
I think that the exact opposite of what the Spanish government were hoping to achieve has been achieved, or assuming that that is what they wanted to achieve. Yeah, no, it's a very uncertain times.
Mm.
What's your opinion to anyone who says politics and football, or politics in any sport, should be entirely separate? What is your immediate reaction to when you hear that?
I'm always sceptical of people's motives when they say that.
Yeah. Are you the same then, Jan?
Absolutely. I think that if you occupy a space... Actually, I was thinking about this before we came on. There's a famous interview with John Lennon in his bed, in his pyjamas, in Toronto, asking him why him and his wife are sitting there for a week in protest to the Vietnam War. And he said, look, I'm going to be on the front page of your newspapers no matter what I do. I might as well be on the front page with the word peace. So... you know, regardless of what you think of the politics of that, Barcelona, I think, they know that they're going to be on every television channel. They know they're going to be they're going to be on the front page of newspapers, and people are really interested in what they do. And the same is true with anybody who occupies any prominence within football or any sport. Like Gary Lineker, for example, last year when the Syrian refugee crisis was at its peak. Made a lot of noise about that. I agreed with a lot of the stuff he said, but a lot of our horrible right wing press did not, and really tried to ruin him over it. And you know, he came out and said, "Look, just because I'm a footballer, it doesn't mean that I can't have opinions." And I think that he, you know, to go back to the Lennon the quote, I think Lineker was using the presence that he would already have anyway.
Yeah.
You could argue he's got a louder voice than Lennon had because he has a Twitter account. but, you know, I think that he brought to people's minds the plight of those people. And I think that if you have got a strong opinion and you've got the ability to get that out there, then you should. So, yeah, sorry, it's a long answer, but I agree with Terry. I think that you should get it out there.
It's a hard question to answer shortly.
Mm.
Yeah. I think you're both right. When anyone ever says that, they've usually got some kind of political agenda that they want to try and get across.
They don't think that they possibly take the position of the person who's being of the political party or the government. So, say for example, people are using football to protest against the government policy. Yeah. If you agree with that policy, you might be the kind of person who would say, you shouldn't bring politics into football.
Yeah.
Well, you might not. I don't know. But I mean, it's been my observation when I've seen these kind of conversations going on Twitter that the people who think politics and football shouldn't be mixed are usually the people who tend to lend towards a certain political leaning. It's been my observation. It's not in any way empirical. But
no, from my experience, comes from the 70s and 80s when I was growing up, and apartheid.
Yes.
And the idea that people would still put out that back then was that sport and politics shouldn't affect
bollocks.
Each other.
Which was because it was bollocks, a massive massive statement against apartheid to refuse to pay for white South Africa.
Yeah.
And made not a decisive contribution, but certainly did make a contribution
very
to the end of apartheid.
Yeah.
And I don't think too many people would dispute that.
Mm.
Unless you were around at the time and thought it was a bad idea, and maybe you don't want to seem stupid for doing it.
A perfectly good example of using politics and sport when you say it shouldn't be is obviously the aforementioned President Trump, when he obviously has a go at people taking the knee in the NFL. He then goes to dedicate the win of a golf tournament to the victims of hurricanes in the Caribbean.
Again, I mean, you can. That's another reason why it's wise to not say that politics and sport should be separated, because you just leave yourself open to hypocrisy.
Yes.
Mm. Or accusations of hypocrisy.
And I suppose that's one reason why the press over here, who would also say about, hey, stick to football, don't get involved in politics, were screeching so loudly when FIFA wouldn't allow the England team to wear poppies.
Mm.
Now, the argument of whether or not that's a political symbol or not, that's very, very debatable. Mm. It isn't ostensibly a political symbol, but it is a personal statement.
Mm.
Well, it should be a personal statement. Mm. You shouldn't have to wear one. It should be a personal choice.
No, it is worth sometimes restating that yes. You shouldn't have to wear one.
Personal statements were also banned under the FIFA rule, and now they've rolled that back, and now they'll be able to wear pots.
Going to, yeah. Have they actually done it, or they're certainly, they think they will be doing it?
It is. But
I don't think it's been ratified yet? In fairness, I don't think that when that rule was made about political emblems on shirts in FIFA competitions, that they really had the poppy in mind.
Mm.
But then when confronted with the fact, this is a fairly recent thing for England. England never used to be worried about this sort of thing.
But they never used to wear poppies.
Excuse me, they never used to wear poppies for the. It's only been in the last few years that they've done it, and then of course they kicked up a fuss. And then suddenly, probably FIFA have gone, right, so you want to start wearing your poppies, fine, that's what you want to do, that's how strongly you feel about it. You know, I mean, it's the centenary of the First World War. People are entitled to feel stronger about these war memories now than perhaps they might have done in the past. I'm not suggesting that this extra poppy attention is sinister, although it could be. It's certainly something that is a recent thing. FIFA, I think, as FIFA do, perhaps didn't handle the situation as well as they could have done.
Yeah.
But then I don't think the FA and, you know, their chums in this instance, their allies in the right-wing press, handled the thing as well as ever, bringing things to unnecessary confrontation over, you know, what is essentially an emblem. And I think that actually FIFA have probably done the sensible thing here by just finessing the rules.
The opposition for the match where they'll wear these is a friendly against Germany, who apparently were very supportive of the England team's right to wear it, which I think shows this for what it really is. You know, it's a, you know, some people see it as a compassionate symbol of the horror of war.
Mm.
Other people see it in other ways. And you know, I respect that. For example, McLean at Sunderland, when he refused to wear the poppy.
Sure.
I respect the fact, you know, he's from Derry and didn't want to wear it.
No, absolutely.
That's absolutely right.
I think I'd be in his position. I wouldn't want to wear it either.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. But it's, you know, that aside, I think that the choice of fixture where that where they may be able to wear it, I think maybe puts this in its place and explains what it really is for a lot of people anyway.
There are some times when football and politics just won't be separated, though, because next week the under-17 World Cup kicks off in India, and there is a possibility if the USA win their group and North Korea finish third in their group that they could be playing each other.
Wow.
In the second round.
Well, why don't they just settle it that way?
That would be a very good idea.
The winner gets to win the war, you know.
So, so could a bunch of 16-year-olds actually sort out something that, you know, that a 70-year-old orange man can't?
I genuinely hope, on a serious point, that that fixture isn't drawn, because I would hate to think that young fellas who are trying to make their way in the world of football had their moment in the sun spoilt because of, you know, an international incident.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more.
They did play each other in the same tournament 12 years ago in Peru. And I'd had a look at that. The USA won it 3-2.
All right.
Be very interested. You'll be interested to see who was on the. You both will be interested to see who was on the subs bench for the USA.
It's not Jozy Altidore, is it?
Yeah, Jozy Altidore. But who else though?
I don't know who.
For Dortmund player.
What, current Dortmund player?
Yeah.
It couldn't have been Pulisic. No.
Subotic.
I didn't realise it. I completely forgot that Subotic played in there.
Yeah. They were both.
He ended up playing for
Serbia. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a mistake. bringing politics in. Anyway. I forgot that he actually. Yes, of course.
Was he the Palace player that?
Dortmund player.
Sorry.
You're thinking of Sasa Kercic.
Yeah, because I was at a Palace match where Serbia was being bombed.
Oh, were you at that game?
I was at that
game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Before the game and maybe after, I can't remember. He walked around "Dumb Bomb Serbia" or whatever it was on his shirt.
And with a placard.
Yeah, and he got booed by large sections of the community who were quite happy to see Serbia.
It's been said that football crowds can be fairly reactionary.
Yeah, and I'd like what you were saying about Germany being quite supportive of the Poppies.
Yeah.
I wonder if the England crowd will be as magnanimous with their support when the German national anthem is played.
Yeah.
No, I think we can safely assume that it won't.
No, of course they won't. Of course they won't.
Exactly.
Football and politics shouldn't be separated, but everything's so polarised.
Yeah.
Everything in this world, in our society, in Western society, is so polarised and so political that the act of turning up for an international football match is a political act.
Mm.
Certainly in this country, and there's people there who have got clear ideas about what being English is, yeah, and then they express those ideas through their support of English. So don't say you should separate sport from politics. It is entwined into the fabric of our lives.
Mm.
Mm. And football is a massive part of our culture.
Yeah, I mean, there is always the danger because sport has always been somewhere where the far right has been quite comfortable.
And the far left.
Yeah.
In fairness, for the fairness of the exit, but yes. And will be again, and is elsewhere in Europe as well. And it's a worrying sign. And so when people, there are people who say football and politics should be separated, and they will have those very people in mind, you know, far right influences on football, and that is a fair and legitimate concern.
Mm. I mean, going up to Celtic Park every other week, the issues about the partition of Ireland is played out every single, you know, every other Saturday there on the terraces. You know, you can't get away from that. No matter what you do, that's always going to be playing its way out.
And the Hillsborough campaign. Yeah. Had voice at Anfield and at other grounds for many years.
Mm.
Many years when the powers that be wanted to bury it.
Mm.
I don't know whether or not that we would now know what we know about Hillsborough without that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And in less successful examples during the pit closures in the 1980s. Mm. And you know, the local clubs there, particularly Barnsley, for example, the club played a very important role in the community. And in giving expression to the anger and frustration that was going on during that time.
That's the thing, isn't it? If you are meant to be representing your community, you come along with everything else that your community has.
Yeah.
Including its problems.
Including its problems. I mean, so many of the rivalries between clubs, in England at least, anyway, a lot of them come down to industrial disputes.
Mm-hmm.
I think virtually every port town...
Yeah.
Has got a club. Has got a local rival that were scabs during some dock strike.
Mm.
Yeah.
You've got that with West Ham and Millwall. You've got it with Newcastle and Sunderland. Yeah. You've got it with Southampton and Portsmouth. It's so ingrained. And you can say, how can you separate politics and sport? When it's like saying, well, yeah, you can't. You've got to separate sport from locality.
Yeah. And community.
And community. Mm. And nobody wants that now, do they?
No. Well, no, that's not true. Actually, there are quite a few people who do want that.
Oh, yeah. So we talked about them all last week.
We talked about them all last week. All those guys from last week. That's what they want.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, see, there you go, listeners. We've backed ourselves into a corner. There's only one way to get out of this.
Music.
Yes. It's international break, so there'll be a particularly World Cup-flavoured newsletter this week. But for now, from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry McFellan, it's goodbye.
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 You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
I still miss the whiskey barrel thing.
Darr. That's a port barrel.
Is it port?
It's here. Look, just put it there.
Port.
No, it just feels like you're saying it. It's like you're doing it for the sake of it. It's not a prop. What's that rustling noise in the background? Jan stroking the port barrel.
Port barrel bloke. Yeah, we're like the log lady in Twin Peaks.